Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Best People We Know radio show. This is where you'll meet experts and celebrities who share their success secrets with you to help you be your most successful best too. Your host, Deb Scott, is a certified professional coach at Discover the Amazing You Coaching and author of the award-winning motivational book, The Sky is Green and the Grass is Blue, Turning Your Upside-Down World Right Side Up. The Best People We Know radio show brings you powerful resources, effective ideas, and transformational tools you can use to educate, inspire, and motivate you to be your most purposeful, peaceful, happy best. So get ready to experience mind vitamins to feed your whole soul. Good change is about to happen. The Best People We Know radio show. Here's your host, Deb Scott.
Well, welcome all the best people I know. That would be you. And feeling the love, happy Valentine's Day, everyone. Group hug around the world. I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it through the airwaves. And we have the perfect person, Dr. Alex Concord, today from the UK. She is just the best of the best people to know. And she is going to share her shine with us. It's a relationship rescue show today. So we have a lot of questions that have already been submitted from around the world. But if you have a question that you would like to ask Dr. Alex live, please call in 347-637-1318. Hit #1, and that'll put you through to the switchboard. And I just opened up the chat room so you could also ask a question in there. I just want to thank everybody before we get started. Wow, you guys are awesome out there voting in the Shorty Awards. We're almost in second place, and if everybody listening sent out a sweet tweet to nominate us in the Shorty Awards and podcaster at Green Sky Deb, geez, we'd be #1 in positive podcasting. So if you get a moment, that would just be a beautiful, beautiful kindness that would be so much appreciated for the Best People We Know show, because we are dedicated to helping you be your best. And Dr. Alex Concord, this is our second month with the Dr. Alex's Radio Rescue, Tuned In Transformation. It was such a hit in January, and we're doing it every single month. And this show, be Valentine's Day, Dr. Alex is focusing on the relationship love. So let's just start out by saying that St. Valentine's Day is the day when we make a point of celebrating our sweethearts. But all those lovely chocolates, flowers, and candlelit dinners and cards are simple sentiments compared with the complex real-world nature of relationships. And when we pause to celebrate, we often find ourselves asking questions. In this Valentine's Radio Rescue special with Dr. Alex, we're poised to bring insight and inspiration to those attraction, romance, love, and relationship issues that matter to you. So what's it all about? Are relationships changing? What if you're not in a relationship on Valentine's Day? What is the basis of success turns into decades? And what do you do if you take a hit in the relationship you're in? Well, you're going to get the answers and tips that you can trust with Dr. Alex Concord, who is MD, PhD, and an MBA. She was selected by Buckingham Palace for the Special Innovators Award for Science and Medicine. She's also named one of the top 50 well-being gurus by the London Times. And she's received Practitioner of the Year by Today's Therapist, and she's frequently seen as an expert in a variety of media outlets throughout the UK and the world. Dr. Alex is one of the world's leading transformational specialists. She is the pioneer and creator of the Crux New Paradigm, Psychology, and the Mind-Body Wisdom. And it is a pleasure and a privilege to have the one and only Dr. Alex Concord with us today. How are you? Well, it's good afternoon there. Good morning here.
Good afternoon from here, and happy Love Day to everybody.
Absolutely. This is so fabulous, and I want to make sure that people know that, you know, we do have a disclaimer. This is not medical advice nor psychological advice, but the opinion of Dr. Alex is for the purpose of education. So, you know, anything that requires visiting a family doctor, a health professional, psychological professional, you know, you definitely want to still follow through with that. But your tips today, wow, we have some great questions, huh?
Yeah, really. And I thought, you know, it'd be a really good thing. We had more questions than we've even managed to send you. And the ones I've picked out, sorry to everyone who I haven't, but I hope that some of the things that we're not covering today are partly at least covered by the questions that we've selected. And some of them are about really joyous things to do with love, and some of them are, you know, more thorny things to do with relationships and so on. So we've got a really good mixture of questions and, of course, people calling in live.
Yes, which is wonderful. And we will definitely be taking less calls this time. Last time we just weren't able to get to them all. But also your website. I want to direct people to your website because there's a lot of books, resources. I don't know how you find the time to do this with everything else you got going on, but you've followed up on so many questions, and that would be at AskDrAlex.com. So I want to make sure people know about that. And also starting on March 8th, Dr. Alex's trusted voice will also be on Blog Talk Radio and the BTR family. Yay! So, you know, you if you're not feeling you're getting all of your questions answered, we do the best we can. But she's around, and this is a process. And so I just want everybody listening today to know that if your questions didn't get answered today, you're going to have another opportunity in the near future. But I wanted to, would it be okay to just go ahead and start with the first question?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Well, this first question, I'm not exactly sure what country it comes from, but the person says, Dr. Alex, I really want to know something. Is love at first sight real? Oh, my goodness. This is like, how many of us are sitting there going, okay, we all want to ask that. I fell in love with my wife the very first time I set eyes on her, and we're still happily married 40 years later. Wow. Some people say that's nonsense. Other people say, well, look at you. You prove it. So what is the scientific explanation with love at first sight, Dr. Alex?
Well, this is so fascinating, and I've thought about this for so many years because obviously – you know, it'd be very interesting to speculate what it is that happens with some couples, you know, with divorce rates high as they are. There's a lot we can learn from, you know, whatever it is that seems to have some relationships working out so well, and somebody still talking about love at first sight 40 years later, and to learn from them. So let me tell you how I think it works when a couple have their sort of love at first sight chemicals still ticking over these decades later. I think it's not just merely love at first sight. I think it's combined with some sort of inner core resonance, which I'll talk to you about as we go through this question. You know, deeper in our emotions and a deep sense of well-being when they are with their partner and so on, and real devotion. And obviously at the outset, when people first get together, when they first meet each other, at the point at which this love at first sight may happen, they don't yet have those sorts of connections. And yet it seems that in certain circumstances when things are set up in a particular way or certain things happen, be it sort of biologically or be it sort of psychologically or whatever, there's a greater chance that the love at first sight will foster an enduring relationship. So, yes, it is actually true. There is such a thing as love at first sight. And to me, it's about the nature of the glue that holds people together. And what I'd like to do is to look at this from two different perspectives because I think people will find it interesting, particularly coming from me, given the sort of thing that I focus on and talk about. So firstly, let's take a quick look at, you know, how we're wired for this biologically and how, if you like, the biological glue in love at first sight and enduring relationships works. And biologists and many other ologists talk about three phases of love, really, three phases of manifestation of love, with different things going on in each phase, psychologically and neurochemically. And these three phases, the way they're most usually put to us, are lust, romance, and attachment. So
lust, romance, and attachments. Okay.
Yeah.
I just had to pause on that. Lust, romance, and attachment. Well, this should be interesting. Okay, I'm listening.
Yeah,
we're listening.
It is quite fascinating. Lust is obviously desire and relates to a physical interaction, and it's more about sex than it is about intimacy. And biologically, the chemicals are set up for lust in order to get us to procreate and to generate offspring, which we'd otherwise call kids. moving away from biology to the reality of the world to generate kids, really, and to you know, it's part of our survival mechanism. And there's a huge number of brain pathways and huge number of brain chemicals that are activated in order to ensure that, as if you like, as a species, we survive. And as human beings, you know, that response is maintained in a biological profile that causes that first initial perhaps spark that may or may not lead to physical interaction. The second part of it, which is much more, if you like, mature in terms of you know, biology, is the state or the manifestation of love as romance, which is the elation, if you like, and obsession, truly obsession, of being in love. It's interesting that obsessive disorders have similar chemicals to the profile, the neurochemical profile of romance. And the idea of romance biologically, the reason we have these neurochemicals, is to get somebody to focus on one individual. And then the third manifestation of love from a biological perspective is attachment, which is where the neurochemicals change to create feelings of peace and calm and security. And biologically, what goes on there during attachment is the creation of a closeness which fosters commitment to support the process of bringing up children. So this is all very, you know, clinical, looking at it this way, but it's quite interesting for many different reasons. And clearly there are combinations of how these different love manifestations in different types of relationship, you know, happen, and one phase may pass to the next and back or not. But one thing that's really very interesting to note for the modern person is that it's quite difficult biologically to go from lust to romance, but it is actually quite easy to go from romance to lust, which means that many people who start a relationship with the purely physical stuff before really pinning down that romance may not really fully drive the chemicals and psychological changes that garners that total focus on one individual during the course of their relationship, and that total immersion in one individual. So I find that really fascinating. It's interesting how, you know, social trends may be one thing, but biologically they're kind of set up in a particular way. So what's also interesting is that when the attachment chemicals kind of dominate, when they rise, the lust chemicals drop. So it's quite possible to go from... Yes, very much so. In fact, it's a similar process when a mother has a baby, at the time when she has a baby, when she holds that baby, and even when the father holds that baby, the same thing happens. It's a biological thing that happens to keep people together, to bring up their children. It's quite astonishing when you look at it like that. It's interesting, therefore, when the attachment chemicals, as I say, rise, the lust chemicals drop. So if in a relationship there is just lust and attachment or attachment, keeping that romance enables the focus to stay alive and kicking and helps to create real glue beyond the things that come with attachment, which is, you know, the sort of mundane, sort of functional, getting through life things that, you know, can often take the spark off a relationship just because it's a lot of practical stuff and a lot less sort of fun being together stuff. So romance is clearly a very important thing, and biologically it's a very important thing. So with that in mind, kind of putting that to one side for a second, added to that, there's stuff on how people match up, which you might say is how they're matched psychologically, which is an interesting concept because some people seem to pair up psychologically, and other people seem to have more of a spiritual component to it, and still others seem to match up on what you might call a functional basis. They don't realize they're doing that, but you know, there are many people who actually match up because they have similar interests and because they both like going to the baseball, or because they, you know, they work together and they just kind of drift into a relationship. And it's a relationship nevertheless, but it's different in its profile from, say, people that get together because they have something deeply resonant on a sort of spiritual level. So from my study and research and observation on this, there is, in addition to this biological glue, if you like, the spiritual, psychological and functional glue, let's call it all bonding glue, that falls basically into different categories. So there's lust, which we'll call the pure physical attraction, which may or may not result in something more in relationship terms. And then, very interestingly, interest, intimacy, and inner connection. So interest is interest because it's something that attracts you to somebody else. And it isn't really physical, at least it's not initially, or it may not ever be that much of an interest physically. But yet there are many things over a period of time when people share a lot of interest that bond them together and can result in something more of a period of time. And then there's intimacy, which is where I think people seem to have something really very special between them from the get-go, a spark of a, you know, more peculiar nature that switches something on that is very much romantic. And it, you know, it's very much the case that, you know, where there is a shared intimacy, the chemicals of romance endure over a long period of time. And then even more so, there is the inner connection. This is where two people resonate, really actually resonate. And it may be that they resonate psychologically, it might be through shared humor, it might be through values and beliefs, or even spiritually through what they hold to be really most important as a core essence of life level. And the way I see it, relationships that start out on different footings with different sorts of functional, psychological and spiritual bonds, such as lust, interest, intimacy or inner connection, seem to me have a greater or lesser likelihood of creating ever deeper love or ever deeper devotion, ever deeper connectivity and happiness and mutual fulfillment. And where this love at first sight thing seems to happen, and there's an enduring devotion and love that goes through many decades, which seems to be unfaltering, I think what it is that that happens here, as this chap is saying in this question, is a combination of something physical and something really inner core that combines the romance with the interest and intimacy and the inner connection. And I think it's a love at first sight that is not just physical attraction, but an overwhelming sort of knowing that when it happens at the very beginning of the relationship, whatever it is that that person is seeing in that something in the somebody else is the thing that they want to continue seeing. So, you know, not just how that person might look, but how they're deeply touched by watching them. For example, seeing them, maybe their smile, their kindness, their naturalness, their sincerity with others, you know, their laughter, that really touches them at a very deep level. And from the moment they see that, they know that that's something they want to be around, something that they want to have in their lives through that other person and with that other person. So attractive not just on a physical level, but actually really beautiful in a way that is perhaps even a source of fascination that fosters enduring romance and creates something, you know, intimate, something inner core that fosters deep attachment. So you end up with enduring romance and enduring attachment that really continues to pull at the heartstrings. And I think we would all probably say that in every which way you look at it, you know, that would be the ultimate glue, and it would have to really hit all the top-notch elements on the love manifesto that everyone would ideally like to have.
Well, you know, Dr. Alex, what I find amazing, and I'm sure that listeners are feeling the same way, we think of, well, love at first sight. Well, that's just such a simple thing. And then when you give all of these details and the science behind it and what's involved in the components and the statistics on things that are more likely to be successful, I mean, there's just so much to this. And I think that what's great is we can really make a decision. We can make a choice in choosing somebody if we're interested in a long-term marriage or a long-term relationship. You know, you're giving us a lot of information that can help us navigate towards that, which is, I think, you know, one of the great things of having you here, because people get the information and knowledge is power.
I believe so. And the thing that's interesting to me is that, you know, life is complex and relationships are complex. And to me, it seems that the really cool thing, and I hope this will be a message throughout the show, that underpins a successful relationship is, without question, your own knowledge of yourself. It's challenging enough to navigate your own life, so to speak, and the elements that are directly about you. But in respect of, you know, wanting things to be the best they could possibly be with your partner in a relationship and your hope of being in a relationship and so on, you know, ideally are giving the best of yourself, you know, giving off, you know, the best messages of yourself. and being yourself the most you possibly can be, so that in that place where you're creating the messages of who you are, the person that is most likely, or the likelihood of relationship starting from that, is a much greater and positive outlook than something that is fairly muddled. You know, if you're muddled in your own head about what you are, what you want, who you are, you know, where you're going, it's even more complex by far. So I think to really give yourself the very best chance in life, not just, you know, for people that are looking to have a relationship but aren't currently in a relationship. I saw a thing on at Love Quotes today on Twitter. People call it Valentine's Day. I call it Thursday. Made me laugh.
Yes. I saw that too. We must have been same Twitterverse there.
Yeah, really. So there are people obviously who are in relationships now, and there are people who are still hoping to be in a relationship, and there are other people that are very happy not being in a relationship at all. But people who are in a relationship or people who are hoping to be in a relationship, there's no question in my mind that to rise above all of this, the most important thing is to really be clear about who you are and what you're about. Because it's more difficult by far for someone else to be clear about who you are and what you're about if you're not clear about that yourself. And so if you want to give your relationship the best possible chances of, you know, endurance and devotion, then without question, that would be a very great start.
So I think that the bottom line is that all of us need to make sure that we can get along with ourselves. Because if we can't get along with ourselves, don't expect anybody else to. It's just, I love that whole thing that we really do need to focus on ourselves, and that is not a selfish thing. That is going to increase our success, that common thread that you mentioned. That's going to increase our success of having healthy relationships, the healthier we are because we attract what we are, and the science that you support everything with is phenomenal. I don't know, well, this is why you're an MD, PhD, and when you're at the Buckingham Palace and everything, because most of us can't comprehend everything that you're saying, which is why we're so glad you're on replay. But, you know, with that being said, and I'm looking at some of the other questions and we have callers, would you mind if we move forward to this next question? Because I really think a lot of people will be interested in this one as well.
Sure.
Okay. So this particular person is asking why when they love each other initially, maybe frantically, but then they split up and they hate each other's guts. So how can they be together before they split up, and then how they are now? And I guess the person is asking, so did they ever love each other to begin with? Because everybody listening, I'm sure if they're not in it, they know someone. Horrible divorces, murders occur from this type of thing. So were they ever in love to begin with to have this type of terrible, terrible breakup?
Yeah, this is a constant source of interest to me in a not very pleasant way. Seeing people completely destroy or try to destroy each other when they get to the end of relationship. The way the question was written was really interesting to me. It sounds to me as though it was written by a younger person. It ends on saying, I guess what I'm asking is, did they ever love each other? And I'm actually thinking this isn't somebody who's actually split up from a relationship. There's some words in here which are actually quite young. And I'm thinking it's somebody who's experienced the turmoil of their parents' fallout and is wondering about that and is perhaps feeling a little disillusioned about the whole relationship thing. And I'd like to answer it from that perspective just in case that is the case, because I often see clients, you know, 30 years down the line from where I think this person, if I've judged this right, is. And, you know, they can stay in a sort of traumatic state, jeopardizing their own chances of relationship and often replaying the behavior of their parents at times when they end up in difficult situations in relationships. So if it is the case that this is what I think a young person who's experiencing parents' turmoil and wondering about the whole thing, I'd like to answer it that way just so we can get ahead of that for them. And I'd like to answer it on three levels. You know, first of all, I want to say this is really about how people react when they're hurt or disappointed. I read a study recently that said that 75% of men and women who identified as being in love felt that knowing that their partner's love was matched by theirs, that was to say that their partner's love was of equal intensity as their own, mm-hmm. was important to their being in love. So that suggests to me that someone's ability to be in the place of being in love often depends in part on their expectation or on their experience of being loved back or feeling loved in a similar way or to a similar extent. And truthfully, a lot of people out there listening to this show are going to go, oh, yeah, that's pretty obvious. And I'm going to say, I find that really surprising. And I think a lot of people fall into this. But to me, you either love somebody or you don't. And if you're invested in that love in the way of a partnership, a love relationship, of being in love, and it's not reciprocated, well, that doesn't mean you should no longer love them. If you love them, you love them. And there may be facets of that person that you really don't like that are manifesting at the end of a relationship. But most of the time, 99% of the time, or even 70% of the time, whatever it was about that person was enough for you to love them. So it seems really poor, in a way, to suddenly turn around and hate everything about them when there are things that are, you know, manifesting that aren't as great as you'd have loved them to have stayed, facets of this person that you really don't care for. And if for whatever reason, in whatever way, it so transpires that you have loved somebody, you love somebody, you're in a relationship and it's not reciprocated, it is really important that you make your choices about whether you want to remain emotionally invested in that relationship, but that's different from deciding you hate their guts. So you can, you know, very much choose to not compromise yourself and compromise your core, if you like, integrity of emotion, because if you thought there was something about them that you loved all that time to that extent beforehand, I'm sure you can kind of bring it to mind, even if it's a little bit out of focus at the moment, that reminds you how you came to be in the place you're at. It doesn't mean you have to stay in the place you're at if it's no longer really working for you in the way that you'd like. So,
I was going to just pause for one moment, not to be just sure. Because for the listeners, what I'm noticing is, and because you're giving us so much information, that this really connects. I don't know if this is intentional in the way that they were organized, but this really connects with the first question, because in this I'm hearing you say, you know, a love by its proper definition is not going to be turning into hate. So perhaps this situation is really, maybe it was lust. Maybe it never was love. Maybe it was, you know, one of those other three components that you described earlier for us. So is that, I mean, this is, I'm trying to connect the dots and do a little segue here. Am I following it properly or not?
Well. Yes, it was intentional. I wanted to give all that information at the beginning of the program, and people who are just joining us now would be interested to go back to that. And again, you know, as well as the sort of the lust, romance, attachment thing, you know, the intimacy, interest in a connection thing, you know, if you've had an interest in somebody, you've been intimate with somebody, and I mean in a deeper way, or you've had an inner connection with somebody, of course you're going to hurt and you're going to feel, you know, perhaps betrayed if the thing's been ripped somehow and you suddenly look at that person and you're seeing something about them that you really, really don't like, and you wonder whether or not you ever got it right in the first place. But if you actually kind of keep yourself in check for a bit and look to it, you were right about how you felt about them in the way that you did or you didn't, unless it was that your relationship was actually built on things that were always going to be risking transience, risking falling apart, because the glue wasn't that deep, it wasn't that permanent because of the way the relationship was set up in the first place. So, yes, they totally do connect.
Wow, that is unbelievable. Well, this is why you're Dr. Alex listening on that. But this is, you know, it really opens up a new way of looking and considering and the possibilities. And I think, you know, and it doesn't have to be age-related, because some younger people or older people, some older people have been in the cycle of maybe a love-addictive relationship or in that lust cycle. So it really is something that gets back to your original point. You have to know who you are. You have to know what you're about before you can expect to ever connect properly or in a healthy way with somebody else. Now, some people out there, and they're probably not listening, they don't care about being the best person they were created to be. But those of us who are interested, you know, you're giving us a lot of ways to accomplish that. Would you like to take a lot? Go ahead. Go ahead.
You know, and obviously, nobody is immune to the pain of rejection or abandonment or feeling threatened. And when people are disillusioned or they're debilitated because of a breakup, or they find themselves alone when they had allowed themselves to be dependent, they'd allowed themselves to be vulnerable, then of course their natural reaction, because that is how the brain is wired, is to lash out. But really what they need to be focusing on is what it is that is making them vulnerable. It doesn't mean they should therefore clam down and never trust anyone ever again or so on, and they certainly do not need to lash out. That is very much a fear response. I understand that, obviously. But, you know, there's a real dilution of yourself, I think, the best parts of yourself that you want to foster, that you want to keep at the end of a relationship, you know, when you allow your years and your sense of abandonment or feeling threatened to overwhelm what you had previously felt to be a very, you know, super or okay or gratifying relationship. I think, you know, I'd hold on to the super and what was gratifying and move on and ask yourself the deep questions about why you're feeling driven to react that way. And certainly from my own clinical experience, you know, I often deal with people who, you know, 20 years down the line are still harboring hatred for somebody who left them 20, 30 years ago, you know, and then they turn up in my clinic with cancer. And I know damn well, you know, that, you know, their whole immune system has been taking the chemicals that are being driven from their brain to their body for all that time, you know. And I say to them, you know, why are you doing this? And they almost say things like, well, now I've got this cancer, maybe now he'll realize how much he hurt me. And I think, well, you know, he didn't actually bother that much at the end of your relationship about how much he hurt you then. Why is he going to bother now? And now you've got yourself in this situation where not only have you compromised yourself, given up on the chance of another more fruitful relationship or a life without the hatred and the fear, would be on your own or with somebody else, and now you're even sick. So I think, you know, rather than let those things spiral with these ongoing effects, possibly even on the children or people that see this around you, I think it's important to almost take a very deep breath, and probably many of them, and ask yourself why you're reacting this way. Because you can't control what other people do, nor should you choose to, nor should you seek to. But you do have your own choices about how you behave and how you are, and you can certainly choose to deal with the things that are making you react in a way that is compromising to yourself or indeed to others. So I'd say stick with your integrity and, you know, try and focus on what worked and what was good and the bit of the relationship that was, you know, good, that you remember well. Obviously, there's a lot of turmoil, a lot of hate, and things may pop up, but I would say, you know, try and work through that and get back to the best mindedness you possibly can about the whole thing and move on.
You know, in what you're saying, what you just shared, and I know you have so many examples from your clinic and practice, but to think that somebody, you know, 20 years later, and we all know people, I'm sure, that have, you know, had unforgiveness in their heart, but to hear you talk about, you know, the physical ailments and the cancer and the things that we poison ourselves with, it's almost like, why are we so mean to ourselves for somebody that's not even worth it? You know, we take the arsenic and expect them to die. That's insane. And you know, I mean, it's nuts. I mean, it is so upside down under the green sky, Dr. Alex. And I think it is.
It's like, read your book.
You're so funny. We need to read your books. We're so happy to have you here. But, you know, I love how all of this discussion and all this hard science that you bring and all this clinical experience, it really does thread back to, we have to keep the focus on ourselves. We have to, you know, be what – and I think that that is just so – so amazing. And I wanted to take a call, but before we do that, can you direct people to where to go to find out more about you? Because this can be overwhelming, all this information. I don't want listeners to feel like, oh, my gosh, if I don't get it now, if I just tuned in, or what did I miss, where am I going? Let them know what to do.
Sure. Well, the outline of the questions that we're answering will be featured in about a week's time on our main website for the show, which is called Ask Dr. Alex. That's D-R. So askdralex.com, where there's information about upcoming radio shows, and there's obviously the outlines of previous questions that we've taken on the show together, Deb. So people can look there for answers to questions that they may have from previous shows as well. Also, they can go to dralextalks.com, dralextalks.com, for information about our forthcoming shows and so on. And there's a little bit of information there about the shows, obviously, but also about products and so on. And they can, you know, sign up for notifications and such so that we can keep them in the loop with what's coming up, what resources we're producing, and so on. As you know, I've moved very much from sort of working, well, I'm trying to move from very happy to see one-to-one people, but increasingly I'm working with people by telephone and spending more of my time creating resources for people that they can use so that I can help more people. And those resources will be available on those two websites, askdralex.com and Dr. Alex Talks. So please keep checking back.
Okay, and thank you for the patience of this caller who's been online for a long time. But I also am going to add one more thing. Starting on March 8th, okay, we're going to really share the shine here. It's going to be Dr. Alex's trusted voice, new on Blog Talk Radio. So Dr. Alex will be here again for our monthly discussion on March 7th. But you can also, and you should follow her on her BTR page because I'm doing that myself. So on March 8th. She's going to be launching that. So let's take a caller somewhere from Skype. So you're on the air. Thank you so much for your patience to hold. You're on the air with Dr. Alex. Hello? 447-766. Did you have a question for Dr. Alex? Okay. Well, I think that is maybe something, if I did that, I certainly apologize. If you can try to call back in, we'll get you right on the air. But in the meantime, Dr. Alex, because I know that we've only got like 20 minutes left and there are so many people that have written in, why don't we go to another question that was, you know, sent in. And this particular person is saying or asking, what would you suggest at the highest level is the most important thing that a couple can do to grow their relationship over a long period of time? Wow, that's powerful.
That's fantastic. And again, that relates to the things that we have, you know, just spoken about as well in a way. I just want to add for people, it is my deliberate wish to try and pack as much into this particular program as I can in every Radio Rescue show with Deb. But what we'll also be doing is taking threads of things that we've brought up in this show that we've known been popular with you and to explore them more deeply and, you know, more comprehensively on the Dr. Alex Trusted Voice show. So please do tune in for those and, you know, look out to see whether or not things that we've brought up during this segment on the Best People show are being featured there. Okay, so coming to this question, what would you suggest at the highest level is the most important thing a couple can do to grow their relationship over a long period of time? It's very interesting. I bet you 90% of people on this call will think it's an activity is the answer, that they somehow have to think of what activity it is that people can do to grow the relationship over a long period of time. And my short answer, which I'll say first, is one, find something to share. And I don't mean share necessarily an activity, but whatever it is that holds you together, foster it. That's the short part of the answer. And also be strategic. And by that I mean determine what it is that you know, how you are together and try and work your relationship in a way that really makes what makes you good together grow and focus less on the bits that, you know, aren't so good. So To answer this question a little bit more comprehensively, if you go to studies on this, what you'll find is that there are two key principles about long-term relationships. The first, I don't necessarily agree with these totally, but I'm going to tell you because that's what the studies say, is to be continuously confirming and reinforcing and validating your partner and the way that they're manifesting to you. So to validate their core values and their traits and behaviors and attitudes and skills and interests and so on. And, the reason they say that is because that kind of fosters the individuality of the person concerned and enables them to continue growing in the way that they are. That's the first thing. Obviously, the corollary of that or the negative part of that is you really need to be quite sure about, early in the relationship, that your partner has the sorts of core values and attributes and behaviors that you want to be confirming and validating over a long period of time, because otherwise you're going to find that a compromise. What I think is even more to the point and where I think this study perhaps is lacking, and it's true. So what I've said about the confirming and the reinforcement and validation is one thing, but the reason I think that is most true is because the converse is really also true, which is that if you continually criticize or erode or dissect or reject who or what it is that your partner is, that will inevitably lead to problems over a long period of time. It might lead to problems over a short period of time. But I think erosion of someone else in a relationship and the constant criticizing of them is not at all helpful, because it undermines them to such an extent that their interaction with you and their interface with you gets really quite critically diluted. So I think the really key thing from that perspective is to find aspects of your partner that you really cherish and to really help to, show your gratitude and your interest in the things that you like most, and also to avoid the constant erosion. People don't realize they're doing it. I think, many relationships where people sort of get to a certain point, they're very busy and so on, and they're very quick to mention the things they don't like, but they're not particularly quick to mention the things that they really like an awful lot, that they've kind of started to take for granted. So that's,
I know, what is up with that? What is up with that? Why do people do that? That is so, that's another upside down thing. It's like, let's talk about all the negative things, but don't, take time to focus on all the positive things. And what you're saying here with this core value in the studies and the validation, wow. I mean, this could change somebody's life today.
Well, absolutely. I just, the other thing that really, I find it just shocking in relationships how there's this constant thing of blame. Why on earth would you have to blame somebody for things that don't work out? Things don't work out in every single life, in every single relationship, in every single day, because life isn't perfect in that way. And that's part of the enjoyment of life, is learning to navigate the difficult bits of things. But, this constant idea that someone has to be blamed for it, normally your partner is the one that gets the, it's just ludicrous. I find it just so undermining.
Mm-hmm.
When things aren't, when something goes wrong of a day or something, it's, bad enough that you've already got that, negative hit in the day. But to then, spiral it up and magnify it by starting to introduce blame and corroding somebody else and, being horrible to somebody else about it when it's just one of those things is just, beyond the joke, really. But anyway, the other thing that is really very important is that people, have the traits that they have, and it's important to not try and change the things that allow them to be the person they are, because they will end up unhappy. That's a fact of psychology. There's a whole model based on that. But if people have a particular way of being, some people have, for example, are constant worriers, that's not great, and it's great if they can find a way of overcoming that problem. But, if they're the sort of person that is a constant worrier, trying to sort of change them when they're not trying to change is a way of ensuring that you'll make them unhappy. And, of course, that doesn't really bode well for a given relationship. So that being the case, it doesn't mean that it isn't great to try and find a way through those things, but the person needs to want to do it themselves. And I think if you have accepted someone as who they are at the point when you both got committed, you should either accept that that was your choice and that is who they are and accept them and try and support whatever positive changes they're trying to make. You know, not try and dilute what they are by suddenly deciding at some point that you're not going to put up with it anymore. So that's the really key thing. But the second thing that I really want to bring up is the fact that what I said about finding something to share. I think it's very important for people in relationships not to lose their individuality and to, you know, maintain their independent mindedness. And the reason I think that's very important is because that's how they were when you got, you know, when the relationship started, when people got together. So when you start trying to reduce the, you know, somebody's independence and what it is that is individual about them and try and turn them into something that they're not or the person that you think they should be, you start to actually corrode and, you know, and get rid of the very person that you fell in love with in the first place. So it's kind of like shooting yourself in the foot. So I think it's very important to notice what it is that attracts you about, you know, to someone that's attracted you all, you know, throughout the relationship, to find the things that really bond you together and try and support that person's growth with the things that really bond you together. Help them to grow by supporting their individuality, and then also find something that is sacred, that is central, that is right up there at the highest level, that is really important to you, that holds your relationship together, that is key to your relationship. And it might be a shared activity, yes, it might be, but it might be a special feeling that you have when you're quiet together, or it might be a shared sense of humor, it might be a value of kindness or honesty, or a connection that occurs in certain circumstances, you know, and foster that something and make sure you create space for that something while allowing your partner to grow to be the best person they can possibly be.
Wow. Wow. So, you know, the science behind that, what is successful, what works, and what doesn't, you know, this is, that could be a whole other show, just all the things that, you know, the listing of things that work and not, but I want to make sure that people know that you can go to www.AskDrAlex.com to get more information on this, because if you've just tuned in, you might be feeling, okay, well, what did I miss and where am I going? So it will all be there. But the next question is from somebody who's 26, and this particular individual says that I'm really confused about what I'm expected to do, how I'm expected to be. I haven't met anyone I can say I love yet, although I thought I did at one time. But what do I do? When will I know for sure that it's love? I've got this job offer abroad and would be good for me professionally, and I think I'm lucky to have a job at all, but my family are saying that if I keep wandering around, I will meet lots of people but never settle down. Now I'm not sure I want to. How should I be feeling? And every time I ask, I get told a different story. Wow.
Well, this is very interesting, isn't it? Okay, so there's many things to say here, and I'll say them as succinctly as possible. The first thing is that what you notice in this question is that this person has, you know, like conflicting messages from outside, you know, in respect of the sort of, the people talking to her about how things should be, and she has a different sort of idea about how she's actually feeling about it. So I want you to notice, first of all, that an awful lot of what we do and how we create relationships is actually based in what's known as social narratives, otherwise known as discourses. And what it really is that we have this, like, expectation of how things should go in our lives. So, you know, you kind of grow up, you go to college, you find a sweetheart, some of the things don't work out very well, then you find another sweetheart, you do work, and then people, are you dating? If not, why not? You meet someone, you find them, okay, things are okay, you invest in everything, in a relationship, and, you know, so on. And things are based on that narrative, and you're sort of with someone for so long, and then people are asking when you're going to get married, and when you're going to have kids, and so on. And an awful lot of what people do and how they even get together with someone in a relationship is based on the sort of narrative that they're following. And to me, there seems to be two main sort of narratives that come from that. One is what I call trading assets, and this is a scientific thing. This is my name, but this is my name for it, trading assets. But you know, there's a known science of the fact that people, you know, trade their own assets. You know, who they are, their good looks, their status, their liquidity, their education, and so on, to find the best, most rewarding relationship they can with the assets they've got. And they use their attractiveness sometimes to secure commitment and so on. So they kind of like trade what they've got to find the best person they can, looking at things like what this person looks like, what sort of job they've got, and so on. And this is very funny. You sort of listen to the radio show as we're speaking. You think, oh, God, that's ridiculous. But people do it all the time. And I bet you, like most of the people that go to Match.com, have got an idea about what this person should be doing, how they should be working, what sort of level of education they've got, and so on. Then there's another sort of way that people do this relationship thing. This is at the beginning of relationships. And that's what I would call the good match relationship, which is where in a couple, both members of the couple are similar, very often similar in status and looks in the beginning, or they have things that they're similarly attracted to, like, you know, baseball and dogs or something. And they find sort of similarities between them. And whereas in the past you used to say, you know, opposites attract, it's really not true. In relationships, similars attract. So there's the trading assets kind of thing, and then there's the good match kind of thing. And these, obviously, as you can think about, they may lead to great relationships, but, you know, they're not likely to be the most satisfying, inner core satisfying relationships that you could possibly have.
When you're trading assets, you mean?
Yeah, trading assets or a good match sort of thing. But this is how people go looking for relationships, even though they don't realize they're doing it. And if they stand back from it, and as we're talking about it, they'd say, oh, gosh, yes, that's true. You know, they go, oh, yeah, he's attractive. Oh, will he be attracted to me? Oh, yeah, okay, well, he will be because you're pretty good looking. Oh, that's really good. Oh, let me see if I can get him out on a date. And it kind of goes like that, as opposed to, gosh, wow, that person really blew my mind, or that person really, I spent an evening with them, and they were so unpretentious, and I had such a great time, and, you know, and things were so easy, and so on, which is a much stronger basis for an enduring relationship.
Well, doesn't this, I just, again, noticing how this goes back to that core value, right? This goes back to, I mean, everything connects again, because those trading the assets, the things that don't last on the outside, the looks, the money, the size of the house, all those things that can go easily because they're not part of that person's inner core value, that's when you get yourself into a state of vulnerability. But what you're saying is it's that core, it gets back to that core value that really is a predictor of success. I mean, it's just beautiful how you segue. Each question connects with the other question just so perfectly, Dr. Alex.
Well, yes, and it's interesting that, you know, if you know, we could answer these questions, we could speak, you know, a long time about how to trade assets extremely well, which is what a lot of people talking about relationships are essentially doing, or how to get the best possible match for, you know, whatever it is you're looking for. But, yeah, these things don't endure. And then, you know, people are surprised that, you know, like, it's great, you know, when people find each other physically attractive, they have that as well. But, you know, coming back to what we said in the beginning about the lust, the romance and the attachment, you know, that in itself, on its own, is never going to be the basis for a great relationship. And people's looks do change over a long period of time. Then people are surprised when they find that they're not in a relationship anymore, you know, just when they're sort of feeling most vulnerable because, you know, something's happened and their looks aren't, you know, what they used to be. But really, the core, you know, way of achieving the strongest possible, most enduring, most fulfilling relationship is through inner resonance. And it might be inner resonance from things like humor or values or belief, but really along the lines of things that you really hold to be important, like it could be kindness, hope. It might be loyalty, things that you have as a really high value. It might just be intelligent conversation. It, you know, it could be anything. Anything that is really core and that, you know, is there, you know, for the whole of time, you know, providing it's true to you in the first place. And so insofar as this person is concerned, I would say, you know, there are a couple of things. The first thing is, you know, don't allow yourself to be, led into believing that you have to be in a certain place at a certain stage in your life and so on, just because other people have that idea for you. Another thing I'd say is, again, if you're, finding that through your professional explorations and so on, you're getting to know yourself more, getting to learn more about yourself, and so on, that's great because you're moving in the right direction. And if it so happens that something happens, that you happen to come across a person who is of the same sort of ilk as you, who shares these inner core things, that you happen to, the right neurochemicals kick in at the right time or whatever, then that is absolutely perfect. And there are also, many different sorts of relationships, loads of different sorts of relationships. They don't all have to fit the stereotype of what we've been socially led to believe they are. Some are really high companionship, what, one of my colleagues I saw the other day called beloved companionship. Others that are really, sparky in a really positive way, that are full of discovery and exploration, with sort of electricity that goes with it. And any relationship that is right for you, I would say to this 26-year-old, is perfect. Whatever it is, don't let anyone, stop you from discovering for yourself what's going to work for you, and go with what you find out about yourself is what it is that you want.
Mrs. Dog Rescuer, we've got the chat room open, and there's quite a few people in there. And Mrs. Dog Rescuer says, great advice. I've been doing the opposite and trying to fix it. It's been 25 years, and lately I've been focusing on bad, not good, and I know I need to reverse my focus.
Love it.
And, so that she's not choking him, which wouldn't be good for you to do, my dear, on Valentine's Day. But I think that probably relates more to the last question as well. But, again, all these questions tie in with the other, which I think is just so beautiful. And that awareness, is it not psychologically, those three A's, you have to have that acceptance, but you have to have the awareness first before you can have the new action. And just by listening to you today, I feel like you plant all these seeds in my head that I never know how they're going to grow. And then I get the awareness, it's like, okay, everybody, just talking to Dr. Alex, all you have to do is just listen, okay, and you just never know what's going to grow in your mind because you plant all these seeds in there, and those awarenesses create the new actions, but we can't have the new actions without the awarenesses first.
That's right. That's exactly right. And most people just go through life plodding one foot in front of the other, turning left, turning right. In all things, you need to be centered. You really need to be who you are and what you are and stand for whatever it is that, that you stand for, being who you truly are. And that takes that takes awareness. And then beyond you being aware of who you are in relation to other people, that also takes awareness. It'd be interesting for you to know that with our new paradigm mind-body system, which is new paradigm mind-body medicine and mind-body living, one of the key elements of it is to create the strongest central, system that best supports your manifestation, at your highest possible levels, not just spiritually, but also biologically, as a consequence of the, you being really true to you, which takes a lot of, self-exploration. But, can be a very happy and is always fulfilling process. It doesn't have to be painful. That's the misconception of all psychology in my mind, that finding positive way forward requires some sort of negative bit in the process. I really fundamentally do not believe, and that's not my experience at all. I just want to say, because I know this show is probably coming to an end just now, for all these lovely people, please stay in contact with us, sign up on AskDrAlex.com for our newsletter and so on, because we're going to be creating resources that should be priced at like $1,000 a piece that we're going to be selling to you for the cost of a cappuccino in order for you to be able to maximize your movement forward in the way that you really want to really help you with these things so you know how to get the awareness and can take the appropriate action. So please sign up for those things and we'll be in touch with you.
Well, I actually, just to surprise you, this is a Valentine gift for everybody. I did extend the show like by about another 10 minutes, so we'll try to get to this last question because I saw that. And then I have another show at 1:30. shameless plug. So for all of you that are interested what's going on with Pope Benedict and the resignation, I have Father Mitch Packle coming on at 1:30 from EWTN, which is one of the global national world networks. So he'll answer your questions. Dr. Alex and Pope Benedict, is that like symbiotic or what? Does it get any better? But this last question, I really want to get this in. That's why I extended it, because I think that many people can relate or know somebody that's had this. This person has been married 3 times and not sure what's gone wrong. But for all of them, it wasn't anything dire. It just didn't work out. Now I've met someone else and I'm really fond of, and I think it's a... How do you pronounce that? Like a goer, like it will work out, but concerned whether the relationship will actually succeed. Is there any studies to tell me what people did to get it right in the end? I could see being a little gun-shy there.
Yes. Okay, so it's interesting. My short answer is yes, the answer is to change. That's my answer. That's the short answer, and this is what I mean. The thing about this question that I found to be really quite interesting, thank you for sending it in, by the way, and this may sound really ruthless, and I mean this very, very kindly, but the way you sound in this question is very sort of laissez-faire. It's almost like you're kind of at the effect of relationships happening to you, as opposed to them being, if you like, a manifestation or at least a dimension of who you are, as if you're kind of like sort of, you know, haphazardly or quite randomly moving from one relationship to the other and so on. And I want to say on that basis, you know, you have choices, and the best relationships will always come from a place of personal empowerment. And, you know, you need to foster your own empowerment, and as we just said in the last question but one, foster empowerment in your partner. So I really recommend that this person immerses in some sort of exploratory work just to find out what it is that really does it for them. And it may be that they've kind of been a bit switched off for a really long time. I often see this with people who have had quite, quite sort of pacifistic sort of childhoods, who never encouraged to sort of take any sort of independent action, you know, never did anything exploratory, you know, sort of set with a, you know, set of rules. And it's quite easy to kind of carry that on from one relationship to another, without actually thinking, you know, what am I about? Who am I? Oh, you know, what is it I want? And so on, as if they just have to accept what's happening to them. Insofar as there have been any studies, yes, there have been some studies, and the interesting study that I saw written in on Time the other day is called Lessons from a Good Marriage, From the Divorce to Finally Got It Right, and I'll put that link on the answer to this question on our website. It talks about, you know, reaching out to others to talk about your breakup and seek advice about how to cope and move on, change some old habits that, you know, didn't work out in your last relationship, find a new way to talk to your partner about money, improve how you communicate with your partner, and learn to handle conflict better. Those are the main lessons that they've come up with here, and you can read that article. We'll put the link up. It's on time.com. But the main thing that I want to say here is that I think those are good, but they're relatively low-level things. You know, just tinkering with some old habits when you've gone through 3 successive relationships and it's no great shakes, but you think it might be a grower and so on, is perhaps an indication that it's time to change. And think about getting rid of the carryover that you've got from previous relationships, because if you've already started out from the perspective of, you know, like baggage from your last relationships. And, you know, obviously every relationship gets more complex because inevitably certain circumstances where you're living, whether or not you've had children, don't have children or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, these things, as you move through relationships or through marriages, these things become more and more complex. So I think it's very important to kind of try and get as close to a clean slate as possible. I don't mean by dumping things that came from a previous relationship, like, you know, suddenly not talking to your kids. What I mean is By getting rid of the sort of increasing disillusionment and despondency and disappointment and so on, and seek to create a positive expectation, which I know may be very difficult if you've not had a lot of positive experience, but it's never too late to too late. It's if you go into another relationship not realizing that it's important to create a positive experience and to create a positive expectation of that experience in order for you to get the positive experience that we're speaking of, as opposed to just kind of dawdling along. Now, this particular question, the way it was asked, is a bit different from somebody who's just had three, you know, failed marriages, if you like, that just haven't worked out for a number of reasons. The reason I'm focusing on this in this particular question is because of the way the person asked the question, which is, you know, really as if they're at the mercy of relationships and they're kind of like, you know, a bit lost as to what to do about it and aren't really looking to themselves to kind of work out what it is they want again and who they are and to create a positive expectation that can lead to the positive experience that they're seeking at this stage in life.
So this person who, you know, feels maybe hopeless, that they're just a victim to having another bad relationship because they've had three failed marriages. What you're saying is it's never too late. And by listening to you and having this information, we can all be empowered to know that, hey, when, you know, whatever we want on the outside, you got to get it from the inside first. Whatever you want to give, you have to really focus. But these are things, to me, that are very empowering and very hopeful. And,
I think what
I see you doing in these talks is taking away, and you mentioned this before in the other question about blaming, you know, and looking, it's your fault and this and that. You really take all of these negative emotions out of all of these questions because you're bringing this in and you're detaching from the emotion and just saying, okay, here are the facts, and now look at all the choices you have. And that has to be a better place.
Absolutely. And it's never too late. Some people...
Never too late.
You know, if they've started, you know, from a weak start, if you like, for whatever reason, you know, they didn't learn themselves enough as kids or teenagers or whatever, they had a few knocks at an early stage, you know, it may take a while to get to the point. It may take decades to get to the point if they haven't done any personal development work or dealt with any of the things that they have kind of latched onto that haven't helped them. You know, it may take a long time for them to kind of their own, you know, will and volition to get to a place where they feel that they could actually get it right this time. But you have to actually think about getting it right, like this person is, but like kind of at a higher level than tinkering with a few little specific details and really asking yourself, you know, what you're about and where you want to go and how you want to spend, you know, your remaining time on this earth to have a really positive experience through the positive expectation and through the empowerment of yourself and the person that you're with and people around you.
Well, I'm telling you, anybody that associates with you can't help but start to unwrap their gifts and be the best person they were created to be, because I think we are who we associate with, and you're never going to get higher than the, you know, the toughest question that you're asked. And I know that the people that are here, and I want to thank everybody for staying over time. I know that we have Patrick in the chat room with Triangle Variety Radio. He's got an amazing radio show, and some of our regular guests and Mrs. Dog Rescuer and Gary Rochelle is in there today, our famous, wonderful, he's got a wonderful marriage, our famous web designer for so many things with the Motivation Marathon. So, you know, just great people. What do you think about the people that are here listening? I mean, isn't that a testimony that you're already, you know, on the right path? I mean, just the fact that you're here and you showed up is a testimony to say, hey, you're already on the way. Look at, you've already proven to yourself just by showing up here.
Absolutely. I'm nodding heartily over here.
You're what?
I'm nodding heartily over here.
Oh, okay. I apologize. You know, I should be better with the British accents, but you have to forgive me with my Boston accent over here. Dr. Alex, you are an amazing human being. It is just such an honor and privilege to have you share this expertise. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars. We couldn't afford you any other way. So thank you so much for all of this. And again, I want people to know that it is really a gift to have Dr. Alex here on a monthly basis. Our next show here on the Best People We Know show with Dr. Alex's Radio Rescue will be March 7th, and we'll have some more questions, anything from science to spirituality, any problems you have, any solutions that you seek, go to AskDrAlex.com, and Dr. Alex will get that together for our next show. And also remember, if you've got more questions and, you know, and sometimes you think about something and you say, why didn't I call in, why didn't I ask, or I didn't want to, or I thought I would, and you kind of go back and forth, don't worry, because Dr. Alex is going to start Trusted Voice on Blog Talk Radio, and that's starting on March 8th. So get all the details at DrAlexTalks.com. You can get your free download of Aspire, Wire, Fire, which was from our Motivation Marathon. All sorts of opportunities to work with Dr. Alex. She's available on Skype. So if this has touched your heart, it's inspired you to step into your greatness and discover the amazing you, as I would say, then follow your intuition and do that, because you're amazing. I'm seeing triangle. Patrick, good show, Deb. Yes, yes, because Dr. Alex is awesome, and you and everybody here listening is awesome. I just, don't you love us? Happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
She's speechless over there on the other end. All right, final
thought.
I really am.
I didn't want to interrupt you, but it's a real honor to spend Valentine's Day today talking to all these wonderful people, and to be speaking with you, Deb, and for you to host this show. And giving me an opportunity to share some of these thoughts. You know, Deb is also a certified professional coach, and she's got some great coaching with dumping the drama for relationships that aren't working out. So it's quite possible. And anyone who has, you know, that you can, you know, go to that and, you know, find your way past any sort of blocks that you've got in your relationships. But also, Deb's book is just amazing. You've really got to get it. It's available on Amazon. So that will help with anyone who's trying to step into their greatness. I really recommend it.
Oh, my goodness. Now, do I owe you 20 or 30 or probably hundreds of dollars for that plug? I just want everybody to know, no, I didn't tell her. I didn't hand her the money just to say all that. That was just unexpected because, you know, Dr. Alex is a giver, and that's just the way she is. And that's another thing on all the traits. You know, we all help each other in this journey called life, and no one has it perfectly, and nobody's staying. But it really does help when you surround yourself with somebody. You know, Dr. Alex has certain gifts and talents, and she's sharing them with us. And then you go out, you listen to this show, and you share it on Twitter, you share it on Facebook, you share it, you know, on Google Plus, you share it with a friend, you download this show on iTunes, you listen to it when you're stuck in traffic. And that's how we help each other. And that is something that doesn't cost a lot of money or take a lot of time. And you know, Dr. Alex, there's no way that we would have 750,000 listeners if it was just me. So somebody out there is definitely following through and sharing this information, and that's how we can keep bringing you great people like Dr. Alex. So just we love you, just appreciate everything about having you here in March 7th and then March 8th. So set up the dates, and we'll pick a topic. When will we know our topic, Dr. Alex?
Well, we'll know it very soon. You and I will chat, and we'll work out what topic to go with, unless we might prefer to just keep it open.
Okay. Well, why don't all of you let us know, and then we can go from there, because we're all about the service scattering sunshine. That's our new thing.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, everybody, if you are interested, our next show is today, very soon, at 1:30. It just worked out that way. So you can join us if you're interested in the historical events of what's going on with Pope Benedict and the resignation, which has been, you know, the top news all over the world. You can join us at 1:30 with Father Mitch Pacwa for that. But in the meantime, go out, make it a great day. You are so appreciated and loved. Be your best, and then your relationships will be your best. Focus on the relationship with yourself. That's what I'm hearing from Dr. Alex. And when you love yourself, when you enjoy your own company, it's naturally going to happen with other people. So be yourself. Everybody else is already taken. Oscar Wilde says it the best. And go out and make it a great day. Thank you. And thank you, Dr. Alex.
Thank you for
listening
to the Best People We Know radio show with your host, Deb Scott. For more on Deb and her guests, plus her award-winning guidebook to transformation, The Sky is Green and the Grass is Blue, Turning Your Upside-Down World Right Side Up, go to Deb's website, greenskyandbluegrass.com. You can also connect with Deb for coaching or speaking. and sign up for Deb's free Mind Vitamin newsletter while you're there. So now, you're one step closer today to your greatness. We look forward to being with you next time on the Best People We Know radio show.